Vakshasya Chishrita Vidurvana Malyudara.
Vakshasya Chishrita Vidurvana
Malyudara. Asava Kaya Ramayam Shavishvam. Arspa Brahma Vyajana Chamara Raja Hamsa.
Arspa Brahma Vyajana Chamara
Raja Hamsa. Sweta Patra Sasino Pari Raja Mana.
Sweta Patra Sasino Pari Raja Mana.
Vakshasi.
Vakshasi.
On the chest.
On the chest.
Adishrita.
Adishrita.
Situated.
Vatu.
A woman. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Vanamali, garland in the forest flowers. Udara, beautiful. Hasa, smiling. Avaloka, glance. Kalaya, with a small part. Ramaya, pleasing. Cha, and Vishvam, the whole world. Parshva, side. Brahma, moving back and forth. Vyajana Chamara, white yucktail hair for fanning.
Raja Hamsa,
swan. Sweta Atta Patra Shashina. With a white canopy like the moon. Upari,
above.
Rajamana.
Rajamana.
Looking beautiful.
Looking beautiful.
Translation. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and a garland were situated on his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude, which captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair appeared on both sides of the Lord, like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. Purport. The smiling face of Lord Vishnu is pleasing to the whole world. Not only devotees, but even non-devotees are attracted by such a smile. This verse nicely describes how the sun, moon, eight-petal lotus flower, and humming black bees were represented by the fans of hair, the overhead canopy, the moving earrings on both sides of his face, and his blackish hair. Altogether, accompanied by the conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, bow, arrows, shield, and sword in his hands, these presented a grand and beautiful audience for Lord Vishnu, which captivated all the demigods there, including Daksha and Lord Brahma. Om Jnanachimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chaksha Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasudevi Govardhanvrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, as explained in the 10th canto, in the prayers by the demigods, when Devaki was expecting Krishna, they prayed that your appearance puts to rest all speculation. Otherwise, people go on and on, speculating. Saguna, nirguna. Does the Supreme Absolute Truth have qualities or devoid of all qualities? Unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appears, people will go on and on with their metaphysical calculations. The appearance of Krishna, and in this case, Lord Narayan,
puts to rest all that unnecessary mental effort to try and understand the Supreme. Of course, that someone tries to understand the Supreme is special. You can see today, in so-called human society, that especially in the developed world, less and less people have interest in understanding what is the ultimate source and what is the nature of that supreme ultimate source. Yet you find that Srimad Bhagavatam is very origins-centric. Right from the very first verse, Janmadi Asata, the Supreme Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. So you have to solve that ultimate problem first, and then you can understand what is the meaning for your life. Sometimes people want to know, what is the meaning of existence? They even ask, why is everything here? What's the purpose? But you cannot define the purpose, and you cannot establish the meaning. Why? Because we are not the ultimate source. Therefore, as Bhagavatam presents in the first verse, it is most important to first identify the source, and then you can understand what to do with everything that emanates from that source. So your main problem, our main problem in human life, is how to get knowledge of that ultimate source and experience that ultimate source. But in a materialistic society, we are busy dealing with the energies without understanding the source of those energies. It's like there's sunlight coming through your window, but you know nothing about the sun that emanates the sunlight. You just accept, oh, there's sunlight in my window. Where does the sunlight come from? Oh, it just happens to come through the window. And when it's there and I'm in the sunlight, I feel warm and I can see. So leave it at that. So this is how so many live their life. There's energies all around. Leave it at that. Meanwhile, we make our own meaning by trying to enjoy those energies according to our own calculations, according to our own rules and regulations. And if we recognize that we make a mistake, what do? We forgive ourselves. And that's it. That's a complete life. Before we can deal with energies, we must understand the ultimate source. We have Isha Upanishad, which is the science of ultimate proprietorship. Isha, controller. Controller means owner, proprietor. Hear from the proprietor, the ultimate controller, how the energies emanating from that ultimate source should be used. That is the Bhakti Yoga system. How to take knowledge from the Supreme, how to use the energies emanating from the Supreme. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is giving precise knowledge of the science of God, you can actually develop a full spiritual lifestyle. A full spiritual lifestyle depends on your being attracted to that ultimate source. Otherwise, your spiritual lifestyle is not full. Material life is all about attraction, yes? You want to be attracted to someone. You want someone to be attracted to you. You want opulences like wealth, education, fame, beauty, because they're attractive. And when someone has those opulences, you feel attracted. So unless you can understand how in the Supreme Absolute Truth there are unlimited opulences, how are you going to be attracted? Your spiritual life won't be complete. You can just absorb yourself in material life, pursuing the temporary attractions that will quickly disappoint you. You can worship the demigods in their partial completeness. Still, that won't be sufficient. The human form of life is meant for understanding what is that ultimate source and our duty toward that ultimate source. Even in India, to act in your duty toward that source, that is when the fullness of spiritual life manifests. We are surrounded by so many duties, which we take as very important. Bhagavatam describes Devarshi Bhuttapter Ninam Patrinam. As soon as you're born, you've got so many obligations. A mundane person simply recognizes the obligations of paying taxes or some obligations to family and friends. But Bhagavatam points out, if you want to really be material, you've got to understand the whole panorama, the whole scenario of your indebtedness. Only then can you actually claim to have sanity. But material existence today is based on a partial recognition of indebtedness. And sometimes human beings can get very fanatical about those partial recognitions of obligation, of duty. You select, this is my duty to this person. This is my duty to my employer. This is my duty toward my family. You select and you focus on that. And then everything is supposed to be fine. But Bhagavatam is educating you that if you want to be a proper material person, you have to recognize the whole scheme of obligation and duty and indebtedness. Therefore, Devarshi Bhuttapter Ninam Patrinam. Your first debt is to the demigods. Nature is not simply acting randomly, proceeding out of nothingness. The demigods are empowered agents for supervising the affairs of material nature, although they're not the ultimate authority. So you have debts toward them. Yajna's sacrifices are traditionally performed for fulfilling obligations to the devas. And then a sane human being recognizes, I have debts to the rishis, the great sages who give Vedic knowledge. I have a debt towards the most intelligent persons. They're the most intelligent because they have the best knowledge. So it is not simply by blind following of tradition that one feels obligation to the Vedic rishis. No, if you actually understand what they're giving and apply it, then you'll recognize your sense of indebtedness and your duty toward them. And there's so many living entities that human beings depend on. We have debts toward them. All of human society, which gives you politics, economics, and nuclear weapons, and destroys the environment, you've got a debt to them. And Patrina, your ancestors, they play a role in your life. So that's the full picture of obligation and duty. In your short human form of life, how are you going to pay all that back? Especially in this day and age when the intricate, costly, and elaborate rituals for yajna cannot be performed. This is why Bhagavatam says, Yajnai Sankirtana Prayai Yajanti Sumedasa. In this age of darkness, someone who manages to have sufficient intelligence performs the prime yajna, the prime sacrifice of Sankirtan. Togetherness in glorifying Krishna. Yajnai Sankirtana Prayai Yajanti Sumedasa. The kirtan, the chanting of Hare Krishna, at the very minimum of its scope, is recognizing our indebtedness and paying off the debt. Ishopanishad, the science of proprietorship, instructs us that we're entitled to live in this world and take resources to the extent that we are living a life of self-realization and need those resources for a life of self-realization. Living like that allows you to be in this world in a balanced way, in a harmonious way. The world means resources. How does a human being decide how much resource is meant for me? My quota, in the language of Ishopanishad. You look at what is the focus of your life, and then you can see if you are in harmony with nature or not. If the purpose of your life, the core of your life, is self-realization. And self-realization, of course, means God-realization, because we are simply parts of the complete whole. Understanding the part means you understand the complete whole, and vice versa. The whole package has to be there. We often point out, when we're speaking in outside engagements, everyone likes the word holistic. Even in India, it's become a very popular term. Holistic this, holistic that. But how can you be holistic if you don't understand the complete whole? What kind of holistic therapist are you? You have to understand the complete picture. If your human form of life is focused on that complete picture, and you are taking resources from this world to live a lifestyle focused on understanding the Supreme, then your resource utilization is basically okay. Bhagavatam is informing us of what is the purpose of the human body and what is the purpose of the resources of the world. We're taking that knowledge from superior persons. Everyone recognizes the need for instruction. You go to school, you go to university, the idea is you're going to get superior wisdom that will help you in some aspect of your life. Parents are very eager that their children do well in school. Our whole human progress depends on getting the best knowledge. Even if you want to be demoniac and want to manipulate persons, you need some demoniac advisors, as Kamsa shows in the 10th canon. Kamsa presented to them, I've got a problem. Vishnu is coming, or Vishnu's already been born. I got a problem, what do I do? They gave him advice. Kill all the newborn children. Anyone that can be Vishnu. So everyone listens to someone. It's not that we are devoid of input. I'm just doing my own thing. I'm making my own way, establishing my own meaning. No, you're taking so much input from others. So Srimad Bhagavatam helps you to recognize where your inputs are coming from. It gives you the skills for doing an environmental scan. Scan around you and see where you're taking your inputs. And then you can do an internal scan and see how those external inputs are affecting you inside. Only then can you start to sort yourself out. So Srimad Bhagavatam is unparalleled for its ability to get you to see exactly what is going on with your life. And everyone wants to know, my life, what am I doing with it? What's going on? But you cannot be self-illuminated meaning you rely on illumination coming from a superior source. Even material life means you take advice from experts. And what to speak of spiritual life? Here we are getting description of Lord Vishnu. I was just hearing the news that in the UP, in India, the government has decided to spend money for revitalizing the flora, the vegetation on Govardhan Hill. That's very nice. They're going to dedicate some money for improving the holy tirthas, places of pilgrimage. But it's very interesting the way the media presented it. As we all know, we have our Hindu mythology, and Govardhan is a prime aspect of our Hindu mythology. In other words, they didn't feel shy about saying it's mythology. It was kind of like nationalistic. The Greeks have their mythology, they're famous for it. The Romans have their mythology, they're famous for it. We've got our mythology too. We want the world to know we've got mythology. So that was the headlines and repeated in the articles. Let's support our Hindu mythology. According to Hindu mythology, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. So this is the situation. The world is in desperate need for the science of the Supreme. The problem, though, as we briefly pointed out yesterday, is that as soon as you hear these details, the saguna nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth, nirguna, as you know, because no material qualities, no material form, no material characteristics, but saguna because of being unlimitedly full of spiritual qualities, spiritual forms, spiritual activities. So you're hearing, Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and a garland were situated on his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which can captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Bands of white hair appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon.
So we were discussing yesterday how you can immediately react to that. It's too specific. It's too detailed. But what is the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth without the most precious details? Your tiny life has so many details. There are earrings in your life. There's hair surrounding your face. But why is it that we have this instinct to reject when we hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? His face is like a lotus flower. The hair is like bumblebees surrounding the face. The earrings are like suns shining. If someone said that about us, we would be very happy. And you'd be angry if someone said that your beauty was a myth. But what is it in us that rebels? This is what I'm trying to get at. What is it within us that causes us to rebel when we hear such detailed descriptions of the Supreme Absolute Truth? First of all, there's envy, of course. If I'm not like that, no one should be like that. If I don't have a white canopy over my head that looks like the moon, no one should have. If I don't have a crown on my head blazing like the sun, no one gets it. So this is why impersonalism is mixed with envy. I don't have it, you don't have it, no one has it. Vishnu doesn't have it. By repeated hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, this envy in the heart gradually is cleansed. This is Lord Chaitanya's process. Chaito Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvana. So much is contained in that first line of the Shikshastika, the first verse of Shikshastika. It summarizes the whole process of bhakti. The heart is becoming cleansed. And in that way, you feel relief from the blazing fire of material existence. Elsewhere in this chapter, it'll be described that material existence means that the snake of time is always poised to pounce on you. And there are two ditches that we always fall into. Those two ditches are known as happiness and distress. Just think of them as ditches. We would certainly recognize distress as a ditch that we fall into, but happiness is a ditch. Bhagavatam can say that without stripping you of any hope for positive identity and positive activities. Bhagavatam can say that because it offers you supreme attraction. And that is why these descriptions of Lord Vishnu are so necessary. When you understand that the goal of my life is to be attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have the best positive motivation. Of course, how can Lord Vishnu's beauty compare to Swayam Bhagavan, compared to Krishna's beauty? Krishna's beauty is described in the third canto of Bhagavatam as being so inconceivable that even the pride of Lord Narayan is minimized. That's how beautiful Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is. In the 10th canto, it's described that Krishna's beauty is such that when he's in the forest during the day, first of all, his dearest devotees, the gopis, they're feeling an ocean of separation, even though Krishna's just gone during the day. He left in the morning, he'll return in the evening. But the separation is intolerable for them. This is personalism. This is attractiveness. Who do you know that if they left in the morning to go to work or school and you spent the whole day just, I can't live without this person. Maybe dependent little children are like that for a few moments. For a few moments only. But the whole day, Krishna's dearmost consorts are feeling an unlimited ocean of separation. As Lord Chaitanya expresses in his Shikshastika prayers. Then, when Krishna returns in the evening, because during the day, they're in anxiety. Krishna's feet are so soft. We have personal experience of that. How can those feet walk on the pebbles and twigs of the forest? They're in transcendental anxiety. What is Krishna feeling? What is the discomfort that he must be feeling? This is the pinnacle of yoga. Not to become caught up in some impersonal Brahman, which Krishna explains is just the manifestation of his personal form. Brahmano hi pratishtham, he explains in Bhagavad Gita. I am the basis of impersonal Brahman. But what's the nature of that I, which is the basis of the impersonal Brahman? The nature of that I is such that he has associates who think about him when he goes to the forest and who can't tolerate his delicate feet walking on pebbles and twigs in the forest.
Although everything in the Vrindavan forest is completely spiritual, everyone and everything in the Vrindavan forest is a devotee. Even the twigs, the pebbles, the rivers, the trees. But out of pure love, the gopis are wrapped in meditation. Oh, how are his feet feeling? We know about the tenderness of those feet from our personal experience. So then when Krishna comes home from the forest in the evening, what do the gopis do? They are cursing Brahma. Krishna's coming out of the forest now. What kind of eyes has Brahma given us? Eyes that blink. Now, when have you ever seen such beauty that you would be motivated to curse the Creator because your eyes blink, and for the fragment of a second, you can't take in the beauty of that person? You've never seen such beauty in this world. So therefore, because you haven't seen it in this world, what's the conclusion? Mythology, because I haven't seen it. No one's that beautiful. I often ask the question. Those of you who are married or preparing to be married, could you truthfully say to your spouse or intended spouse, "You're so beautiful that I can't tolerate it when my eyes blink"? Could you actually say that? No, you know you can't. You might like to hear it from someone, but you can't say it. And you don't really believe it, but you'd like to hear it. But these statements are factual descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam about how unlimitedly beautiful Krishna is. But not only is the Creator cursed for making eyes that blink, but he's also criticized for giving the residents of Vrindavan only two eyes. Because they say two eyes are not enough to take in the beauty of Krishna. If there's going to be any hope for our self-realization, if there's going to be any possibility for full spiritual development, we need complete knowledge of the Supreme. What you see happening in the world today, is that in some places people are giving up on even mundane religiosity, or else they're becoming very attracted to preliminary forms of religiosity, very crude forms of religiosity, in which there is no information given about the Supreme. Of course, we respect any attempt to try and understand what is God. At the same time, we're duty-bound to point out that for your attraction to the Supreme to be complete, you must have complete knowledge of all the opulences of the Supreme so that you can be attracted. So these descriptions of Lord Vishnu are not just some arbitrary information that Shukadeva Goswami is giving, Maitreya is giving to Madhura. No. These are crucial details that our spiritual life depends on. And gradually we'll understand how crucial the information that the Bhagavatam gives about the Supreme Personality of God. Gradually we'll understand how crucial it is. Just as for the residents of Vrindavan, their meditation on Krishna is crucial. Their not being able to tolerate a split second separation from Krishna is crucial. So this information is our spiritual heritage. It's what we're inheriting. We are inheriting it from the best parents, the best family line. You have to get, as we said earlier, your information from somewhere.
If you have doubts about Srimad Bhagavatam, then try to understand the character of Shukadeva Goswami. Try to understand the character of Sutta Goswami. Try to understand the character of Maitreya,
Uddhava, Prahlad Maharaj.
You get more information about those personalities than what you'll get from the most powerful persons in the world today. You have no idea what the most powerful persons in the world are really thinking or doing.
But Bhagavatam gives you in-depth analysis of the character and personality, the attributes of these famous personalities who are giving you the information. Just like, for example, in Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Again, those of you who have sufficiently read Srila Prabhupada's books, Brihad Bhagavatamrita awaits you. And there's Rupa Goswami's Lagu Bhagavatamrita. There it says that, I mean, goes further. He says, if you put Krishna on one side of the scale and you put Uddhava on the other side of the scale, it balances. This is how extraordinary a devotee is. By Krishna's arrangement. Therefore, you're hearing about Lord Vishnu. He looked extraordinarily beautiful because a goddess of fortune and a garland was situated on his chest. Those are his energies. And the energetic is always with the energies. Shakti, Shaktivado, Abheda. You can't separate the energy from the energetic. So in that way, the Supreme Personality Godhead is always self-sufficient. It's not that he is dependent on the goddess of fortune or the garland. They're his energies. He's the diamond. They are the golden ring. Both the diamond and the gold ring are always together. The full understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth means to appreciate the complete package, the energies and the energetic source, and understanding our relationship with that source. And that relationship with that source is not simply one of awe and veneration, although that is a very good beginning. And that understanding will take you to Vaikuntha. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to give you more than Vaikuntha. He wants to take you to that abode where no one even cares to know that Krishna is God. They're so much in love with Krishna, they just say, whatever he is, he's our all-in-all. You can't calculate that kind of love. Can you imagine, again, those of you who have a spouse or are thinking to have a spouse? Can you imagine saying, in our tiny existence, I don't care whether you have a job or don't have a job. I don't care whether you're healthy or not. I don't care who your friends are, what your family is. It's just you. Everyone would call you quite foolish. But in Vrindavan, it's like that. Krishna, he may be God, he may not be God. All we know is we love him. They're not philosophically attracted to Krishna. Although that philosophical attraction is necessary for us to develop our spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Sometimes in Braj Leela, you'll find the residents of Vrindavan speculating after seeing Krishna do something inconceivable. Who is he? Didn't Gargarishi say something? This boy would be equal to Narayan. Actually, we know what happened. By the pious activities of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they had such a child. So they were sometimes speculating this way and that way. But then Yogamaya would cover them over and they would stop their speculation.
and just get to the real business of Vrindavan, which is simply loving Krishna.
So this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu
wants to give us.
It's amazing that in the most degraded age, the darkest age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Sri Krishna Chaitanya, is giving the highest spiritual experience, the highest spiritual knowledge. In other words, we don't know how fortunate we are. We think, oh, I just go to the temple, I bow down before the deities, I do some pranams, I put a little something in the hundi. The depth of bhakti is far beyond what we can materially understand. And it's true that just by coming to the temple, offering pranams, putting something in the hundi, the benefits you get, you can't imagine, you can't calculate. But there is so much more to be had than that. The real use of our human body is to get to the depths of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering. How to become so attracted to Krishna that your attraction is not dependent on knowledge of Krishna's opulence. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing Vrindavan consciousness in the most degraded age. He's basically sticking it in your chest. Srila Prabhupada wants to find Guru Kripa, the special mercy of the Guru in that way. A devotee asks him, Prabhupada, what's Guru Kripa like? And Prabhupada just pushed in his chest. Take it, take it, take it. That is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing to us. That's what he's giving to us. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, Namo Bhavana Jaya. No one is more magnanimous. To say that no one is more magnanimous, you have to understand what that person is giving. We spoke about how in the UP they're trying to improve the vegetation, the flora, in the holy tirthas, especially Govardhan Hill, which is very nice. But at the same time, there's the conception of Hindu mythology. Why is there so much confusion about Krishna, even in India? Because they're not trying to understand Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Failing to go through Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, in the role of a devotee, giving you the methodology and strength and clarity to understand Krishna, without going through Lord Chaitanya, is very difficult to understand Krishna. Therefore, in India, the land of Krishna, there's so much controversy. Who is this Krishna? Does Krishna come from Vishnu? Does Vishnu come from Krishna? Is Shiva superior to Krishna? Is Krishna superior to Shiva? So much confusion. Because I'm not understanding Krishna through Lord Chaitanya. So, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have clarity in understanding Krishna. And it seems quite clear, doesn't it? But that clarity is coming from Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, Krishna is very complex. I was speaking with some scholars of South India. They were professors, Western professors, teaching yoga knowledge of this form of Hinduism, that form of Hinduism. And some of them, actually one of them, His Holiness Prahlada Ananda Maharaj is here, he's one of the original famous Buffalo Brigade. One of them was from the Buffalo Brigade, but he took an impersonalistic path. But he told me, yeah, remember Buffalo? I was part of that crew. But then he went somewhere else in New York and he met an impersonal guru and proceeding in that way. So he was telling me that, and then he kind of looked at me and said, "Who can understand Gaudiya Vaishnavism?" And I can appreciate his saying that. Because without attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our knowledge seems so complex. Is Radha and Krishna, Radha and Krishna combined in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Krishna is superior to even Narayana and Vishnu? Just like in the Vamana Purana, Brihad Bhagavatamrita tells you this. There are verses where Lord Shiva is giving benedictions to Krishna. He says, aha! Krishna has his pastimes, his ways of doing things, in which he's glorifying his devotees. But it can be confusing for you, unless you have proper guidance, unless you have clarity coming from Lord Chaitanya. It's bewildering to understand Krishna ordinarily. When you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you find Narada Muni points this out to Shiva. Shiva, you're such a great devotee. You're the greatest devotee I've been looking for because you offered benedictions to even Krishna. And Shiva gets very angry. Ah, I was such an offender. Don't mention it. This is complex. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his representatives, we can understand the complexity. So therefore, we are very proud of our dependency on Parampara. We see through the Parampara. The Parampara, the descendant succession, is a spiritual technological device for seeing the Supreme Absolute Truth. Just like your glasses allow you to see. They're a device. Or a telescope, or microscope, whatever technological instrument you have for seeing what you normally can't see. Similarly, the Parampara is like that. It is a transcendental, personal mechanism for seeing what is normally invisible to you. Even in this age of most intense darkness. So therefore we relish these details that Srimad Bhagavatam gives us because the Supreme Absolute Truth is infinitely detailed and that's why there's attraction. So the devotees are always wondering. When Krishna puts on his earrings, do the earrings make him look beautiful or does Krishna make the earrings look beautiful? This is what a devotee is thinking. How many of you, when you put on earrings, and of course the men wear earrings these days too. How many when you put them on? I'm putting this on to make the earring look more beautiful. No, you put on earrings with the hope that others will recognize the increase in your beauty. But Uddhava explains in the third canto of Bhagavatam that by Krishna putting on earrings, he makes the earrings look beautiful. It is these details that so captivate the consciousness of the bhakti yogi. What about Krishna's smile? Last point. First of all, Krishna's body is unlimitedly beautiful. Then, more beautiful, this is explained in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, more beautiful than his body is his face. Yet, even more beautiful than Krishna's face, even sweeter than his face, is its smile. When you say that Krishna has a lotus face, that metaphor is just to give you some idea of Krishna's beauty. But words like lotus face are not sufficient. But the lotus flower is the most beautiful thing in this world. Have any of you actually seen a fully developed lotus flower? Beautiful. Yes. Unforgettable. Just so perfectly formed. So therefore, the Shastra uses that example. Lotus face, lotus feet. But still, those descriptions are a conduit that bring us the full experience of Krishna's beauty. Otherwise, Krishna's beauty is incomparable. He empowers the descriptions in Bhagavatam to give you the experience. So the words of Srimad Bhagavatam are not simply someone's theory, they're not simply print on the page. They are the presence, the literary presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because they are the literary presence, you get experience by associating with those words. And therefore Lord Chaitanya said, before you are liberated, read Srimad Bhagavatam. And after you are liberated, go on reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes?
I just have two questions.
One, please.
Only one?
Yes, only. Pick the best one.
Can you throw a bit of light on Rudra Sampradaya?
On?
Rudra Sampradaya.
It's a genuine Sampradaya coming from Lord Shiva. It can be difficult to find a genuine representative of some of the Sampradayas in this day and age, but still, they exist and they are genuine. Let's see if someone else has a question. Okay. Remember, Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. Later in this chapter, you're going to hear how, in the presence of Lord Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, all the demigods are offering their prostrated obeisances. So Brahma has his Sampradaya. Lord Shiva has Rudra, has his Sampradaya. Lakshmi Devi has her Sampradaya.
So why does it celebrate Shivaratri? Why do you celebrate Shivaratri then? If Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava, why you are not celebrating Shivaratri in this form?
Why are we not celebrating Shivaratri in this?
When you look at Krishna Leela, you see that sometimes the residents of Vrindavan would celebrate it and sometimes not. Because Lord Shiva most appreciates it when you worship Krishna. Yes, of course. You have to take it from Lord Shiva. He is most appreciative to him when you worship Krishna. No offense. Let's hear from some others, though. Thank you. I'm glad you're very keen. You have Srimad Bhagavatam in your home? The full set? And you've read it? Oh, that's the problem. What about the graduate study to Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita? Oh. So both are required. Very good. Yes, Maharaj.
Well, there's another question, but in this age we do worship Lord Shiva in the form of Advaitacharya, the Sada Shiva.
Ah.
And therefore we chant his name every day. And we celebrate his birthday. So that's Lord Shiva's. We're actually worshiping him by worshiping the Panchatattva.
You heard that. In the Panchatattva, Advaita Acharya is Sadashiva. Expansion of Shiva. So therefore, when you say Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Bhubunitananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasudeva, in that way you're also acknowledging Lord Shiva in the best way. No. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned about how we fall into these two ditches of material happiness and despair. And yesterday you were talking about how the knowledge means to not see happiness in anything material. So I was recently talking with one devotee and he was mentioning that I fully understand that happiness is in spiritual activities. But then, you know, having a good house at the beach or a good job is like an enhancement.
We are not against persons having nice houses. We're not against them going to the beach. We're not against them having a good job. Live comfortably as your karma allows, but don't think that's the ultimate goal of life. That's all. Everyone has different amounts of happiness and distress coming to them because of their past karma. But don't take that as the most important thing. Understand what is the real mission of your human form of life. Whatever you have, you use it in Krishna's service. Some of you have so-called good jobs, at least for the moment. Some of you have tough jobs. Some of you have big houses. Some of you have small houses. What is Krishna looking at, though? Krishna is looking at how you use whatever you have in his service. Sometimes you can hear householders talk amongst themselves. Oh, this householder has good money karma. Yes, some families, money is no problem. Other families have to work hard for their money. But the whole point is, how much is Krishna in the center? And therefore, there's no point to be envious. That family has two cars, our family only has one car. See how you can live without jeopardizing your bhakti. What's the point of material accumulation if your bhakti is threatened? What's the point in getting the better job if it stresses you out so much and you stop chanting Hare Krishna? What is the value in having more children than what you can maintain while chanting your rounds? So you analyze in that way. Otherwise, there'll be differences in terms of the assets of different families. Don't fall into the trap of social comparison. This is a very main dynamic of material life. Social comparison, especially in a consumer society as we live in, means you're always looking around to see what others have. A materialistic society, a consumer society, is based on social comparison. The masters of the consumer society want you to look around and feel insecure. They want you to always be in a constant state of unrest. I don't have this, that person has that. When you're manipulated like that, someone can take advantage and make money off you. So bhakti, the bhakti lifestyle, produces peace because you're looking around and seeing how others are advancing in devotional service. You're not looking around and getting affected that family has more money than mine. That family has a bigger house than mine. You're looking around and seeing who is so sincerely serving Krishna.
So that's the kind of social comparison we want. Therefore, the Shastra explains that association with devotees is most crucial. Without association with devotees, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, you lose the ability to discriminate between material and spiritual activities. It all becomes hazy. But you can retain your sharpness and your clarity by associating with devotees, and you become inspired. Oh, that devotee is serving Krishna so nicely. I should also try to be like that. So in bhakti, in terms of sangha, we're happy to look around. But in terms of material vision, looking around causes you problems. You get envious. You feel insecure. You make bad decisions in your life that spoil your spiritual development. So in conclusion, we are not against your looking around. But look around and socially compare in the bhakti way. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
I have one last question.